This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Ray Dittinger has joined us, and again, we're going to make the ultimate book of sports movies featuring the 100 greatest sports movies of all time a pick of the month here on the Sports Byline Book Corner, so I urge you to check it out. It's a fascinating read, and you won't be able to put it down, but if you put it down, you'll look for time to pick it back up again. I alluded before the break, Ray, to how you guys did this on each movie. Tell everybody how you broke it down and some of the things you talked about each movie.
Well, obviously there's a synopsis of the film, which sort of tells the story of the movie, and a lot of stuff about the backstory and the making of the movie, how the movie was cast and how the cast changed, and different sort of subplots in the making of the film. So we tried to find as much of that as we could through research, but Glenn and I found that there were a lot of little leftover tidbits that we just began just sort of saving them, and then we began structuring them at the end of each of the chapters. So at the end of each film, then we get into these little sort of subcategories where we have what we call cheers and jeers, where we have something about the film that we really liked, and then we have something about the film that where we find a little fault. We have another section called What They Wrote at the Time, which is an actual lift from a critic's review of the film when it first came out, which is kind of interesting because, you know, some of the most hailed films and some of the most honored films were not necessarily universally hailed when they first came out. So we have some of that. We have repeated watching quotient, which kind of is our take on, you know, how often you might want to rewatch this. Does it wear well in multiple watchings? We have a thing called pivotal scene, which kind of is self-explanatory. What scene in the movie does everything kind of come into focus? We grade each film for its sports action, A to F. You know, how good is the action? How well shot is it? Does it look real? Does it sound real? We have a best line that's sort of the key line in the film. We quote that. A bet you didn't know, which is like a little known fact in the making of the film. And one of the categories that Glenn came up with, which I really liked, was the category called I Know That Guy, which is something that we all have when we're watching something on television or in the movies where somebody comes on the screen, he's sort of standing in the background or he just walks in the door, and you point and you say, I know that guy. You know, I saw him somewhere. And then you spend the rest of the night trying to figure out where it was, you know. So all of these movies had those kinds of characters. And so in each of the movies, we have an I Know That Guy. So who's somebody that, and we sort of try and point out, remember that guy who was the corner man in the second fight? Well, you probably might remember him as he was one of the hole-in-the-wall gang in Butch Cassidy or something like that. So a lot of this stuff, it might seem arcane, but it's an awful lot of fun. And I think that's one of the things that people that have read the book have really come back to and said, you know, those are nice little surprises. And you know what, reading that, I actually learned a few things.
Well, I agree with you, and I just kind of opened the book here, and your number 46 movie is This Sporting Life. Now, a lot of people probably didn't hear about it. It came out in 1963. The sport was rugby. It starred Richard Harris and Rachel Roberts, and under the goofs, I was laughing as I read this. Because of a tight budget, it didn't allow for the hiring of many extras. Hundreds of wooden dummies are placed among the spectators during the game scenes. Look carefully, and you'll see them.
That's true. That's true.
What are some of the other favorite goofs that you have of movies?
Well, we called it a goof. I don't know if, well, I guess it kind of is. It's in the movie Bad News Bears, which is a movie that a lot of people really still like, and we definitely put it in among our top 100 movies. I mean, there were many sequels, and none of them as good as the original. But in the original, if you look closely, you can see that the Tatum O'Neal character, the girl pitcher, who's the star of the team, she's not really throwing the ball. You can see that there's a teenage boy is actually doing the pitching. And in certain scenes, his wig fits better than others. So if you look real closely, you can kind of see that that's not Tatum O'Neal humming those fastballs past the hitters.
And in Seabiscuit, you talk about the 10 different horses that they used in Seabiscuit, and they kind of changed color, did they not, along the way?
Yes, if you look closely, you will see that. That is correct. One of the and as the book grew and took many different shapes and forms in the course of writing it, and Glenn and I kept coming up with different ideas. Things would come along and we'd say, you know, we really should talk about this. Well, why don't we just create a chapter and talk about this, and create a chapter and talk about that. One of the chapters addressed kind of what you talked about, which is why are there so many boxing movies? Why are they so popular? Why do they endure? So we did a whole chapter just about that theme, exploring that. You and I are both former sports writers, so, I mean, you can kind of relate to the chapter that we wrote about how sports writers are portrayed in sports movies. You know, why don't sports writers come across in sports movies the way news reporters do? You know, why aren't we given the credit for being people with real news sense and integrity the way Woodward and Bernstein were? You know, there was a category that Glenn and I talked about, great sports scenes that were from movies that weren't necessarily sports movies. And we wanted to try and find a way to include those, like the football game in MASH, the original MASH. You know, it's not a sports movie, but that's a great scene. You know, so then we created a chapter that was exactly that. These were great sports scenes from non-sports movies. You know, the basketball game in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, for example. You know, the chariot race in Ben-Hur. I mean, these are great sports scenes, but they weren't sports movies. Well, we felt like they belonged in the book somewhere, so we created a category for them.
I can probably answer the question of why sports writers don't get as much credit as other people in sports, and that is because having been in press box most of their lives, sports writers can look down and probably can't tell you what color shoes they're wearing.
Well, that is part of it. Yes, I will agree that that is part of it.
I really
do think the biggest reason is that when you think about movies about the news media, the news media is always trying to bring down some sort of evil establishment. News reporters are generally, they're the good guys. You know, I mean, Woodward and Bernstein were trying to bring down a corrupt presidency. You know, Michael Douglas and Jane Fonda were trying to save humanity from a corrupt nuclear power plant, the China Syndrome. I mean, the reporters are the good guys in those movies. In sports movies, the athlete is the good guy, almost without exception. I mean, he's the good guy. So the sports writer is now on the other side of that.
He's the antagonist.
The sports writer is always the guy that's trying to dig up dirt, yep, or he's asking inappropriate questions, or he's just bugging the poor guy and won't leave him alone. You know, it's the Max Mercy, Robert Duvall character in The Natural, for example. So it's, you know, we're in the one that the press is really kind of on, is the good guy. In the sports movies, they generally are the antagonist, and they're working at odds with the hero.
The other part of the book and the different movies is the best line in Under Seabiscuit. You have jockey Red Pollard, who said, "Everybody thinks we found this broken-down horse and fixed him, but we didn't. He fixed us, every one of us, and I guess in a way, we fixed each other, too."
That's true. That is a great line. That really is a great line.
Any others jump out at you?
I mean, there were so many of them. In a lot of them, Another one of the horse racing movies, which is sort of a foreign version, almost the Australian version of Seabiscuit, was a film called Farlap, which is hard to find in this country, but it's wonderful, and it's actually better than Seabiscuit.
Yes, it is.
Very similar story. The horse with no pedigree, who comes along roughly at about the same time to sort of the Depression and becomes this underdog hero of the working class. And there's a great scene in there where they have to actually hide the horse for a while because gamblers are going to try and kill it. And they hide it, and they have to put it in a van, a special van, and rush it to the track to be there in time for this big race. And it's all sorts of dramatics, and they barely get there on time. And when they finally let the horse out of the van and run it onto the track, the jockey says to the owner, "If anything catches us today, mate, he'll have to have wings," which is a great line from that movie. And that's, you know, that was one of the things about the book was he didn't want to just pick all obvious movies. I mean, Glenn and I really did our research and our homework on this, and we found a lot of movies that were certainly off the beaten path, movies that we actually had trouble finding, but we had heard good things about. And Farlap was certainly one of them. You mentioned This Sporting Life, which is a foreign film about rugby, which I don't think a whole lot of people in this country have seen, but is really, really good. And Glenn found and reviewed a movie about cricket called cricket in India called Lagan. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. We didn't exactly just stay with the obvious. I mean, we tried to make this as inclusive as we could.
We only have 90 seconds left, but I'll give away the top 10. Rocky, Hoosiers, Raging Bull number 3, The Natural, and Bull Durham rounding out the top 5. Slapshot, The Longest Yard, The Hustler, Caddyshack, and number 10 is North Dallas 40. In about the minute that we have left, number 100, though, is the one that I like, and it's kind of a cult movie that you're laughing. The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. Briefly tell everybody what that movie is about.
It's about a down on its luck basketball team is about ready to go out of business, that they decide the franchise is about to go under, and they decide the only way to save it is they're going to get a bunch of players and coaches together, all under the sign of the fish, the Pisces. And they get, of course, Julius Erving just happens to, that's his sign. He happens to be part of the team, and they do save the team. But it was new movie 100, and as it turned out, it was Donovan McNabb's favorite movie of all time. He watched it as a kid, loved it, and he said he still watches it today.
Are you happy with the way this book came out? Because usually when people do lists, they go back and they think about it, read it, and say, I wish I'd done this or done that.
No, I wouldn't change a thing, Ron. Glenn and I talked about that, and in so many ways the book turned out to be much richer and deeper and more rewarding than we originally envisioned it, and we're just thrilled with it. I hope that the people that pick it up feel the same way.
In about 20 seconds, what do you want people to take away from the book then?
I would like people to do what they've done already, which is saying, I read about this, I didn't see this movie, but by golly, after reading this, I want to go out and get it. I've heard that a lot about some of the more obscure movies, that people were actually motivated to want to now go see it based on having read the book, and that's kind of one of the things we really wanted to achieve.
Ray, I got to tell you, it's the best book I've ever read on sports movies, and congratulations to both of you, and thank you for sharing your thoughts on it. Come back anytime and join me here on Sports Byline. Thanks, Ray.
My pleasure, Ron. I'd love to do it.
The name of the book is called The Ultimate Book of Sports Movies, featuring the 100 Greatest Sports Movies of All Time. We continue with more of you in Sports Byline.